it's the only real events in time and space from God's standpoint, and they're the feast days that are the set times. And they're set as anchors to bring us to do things, to do something, to do mostly things we don't understand when they're happening. We certainly don't understand them before they're happening, but in the process of happening, then all of a sudden we remember that, oh, that's supposed to happen, or oh, this isn't strange, or oh, this doesn't mean that the world has come to an end, or in my life, or and Passover is the time in which most of the it's an unsettling that happens to us in 100,000 areas. And it happens, and I think it's happening this year at a much deeper level than it's ever happened before. There's always the jokes about the plagues and, you know, the idea that, you know, the world's worst words during this time are, do you have a minute? But that's no longer the thing that's happening, and it's not just happening in any one or two people, it's happening throughout the entire body. There's a different thing taking place at a far deeper level, and it's happening so that you will have rejoicing in yourself and not in another. And each of us are at a different, each of us have a different pattern that brought us here, and a different genetic history and a different experience history. And so the way it looks to each of us may be different, but the common denominator is, it's what we studied in Revelation, and it's part of this, it's the seismos. It's the shaking of all things. And during the time that I'm a fairly strong believer, right? I mean, I think I know the word. I think I've seen the faith tested a million times. But I promise you that if I were in an earthquake, I would forget. I would say, oh shit, maybe there isn't a God. It's the time in which, you know, with me it happened earlier, because I guess that's the lot of being the person that's the leader. You have to go through it before the rest of the people. But to lose Tyra, to have that Primetime Lies thing aired in every market of the United States. But there's a total and a complete but it's the promise of God that you, at the core of your being, that has nothing to do with anybody else, it has nothing to do, it's the promise of God that you will be shaken in such a way that will cause you to doubt your very sanity, your very belief in anything that you thought was good. It will cause everything in the universe, in your world, to be shaken, and shaken hard. So that there's no, the fruit of it is so that there is no thing, there's no past, there's no present, there's no future, there's no thing that you can hook yourself to. You know, I had to face, in this thing with the Primetime Lies, I had to face the likelihood that there would be, that everybody that I felt dear to me would leave. I mean, that's what my mind said. And I had to face that the possibility of those all those years of aloneness again, when there was nobody else that saw the cross, or at least that I had ever seen. So I promise you, it's going on in each one of you at a different level, but you're being shaken to the core, so that, you know, down to the point where you may even doubt your sanity or your, I'm talking about it, I'm not talking about your public persona, I'm talking about you and your quiet time. But I promise you that it is of God. It's to cause you to see that in the midst of even that, He will never leave you nor forsake you. It's to see that if there's been the slightest tendency to put your eyes on a person, or even to put your eyes on the body, something, that it has to be shaken, so that the body can't ever exist if it's preached. And if somebody thinks the body is important, then it will have to be destroyed in order that you can see that He's the only important one. So whatever is necessary, at whatever core level within you, if it hasn't been shaken yet, which I kind of suspect it has, it soon will be. Everybody get a Bible. Go to Hebrews 12. All of the 12th chapter of Hebrews is about chastening, about the trials, about the shakings. The 11th chapter of Hebrews, let me just read a little bit of it. You've heard it 1,000 times. Starting in verse 30, "By faith the walls of Jericho fell down after they were compassed about 7 days. By faith the harlot Rahab perished not with them that believed not, when she had received the spies with peace. And what shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon, and of Barak, and of Samson, and of Jephthah, and David, and Samuel, and of the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover, of bonds and imprisonments. They were stoned, they were sawn asunder, they were tempted, they were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and in mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. And these all, of having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise. God having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect." I mean, neither you nor I, in our honesty, if we were God, would have created a universe like it is. We would have created a universe in which there was no death. We would have created a universe in which there was no pain, no doubt, no suffering, no fear. And what we'd have done is created a universe in which we don't need God. And think about it. And at the core of our belief systems is this universe. You understand? We put our, if I were God, we put that color on our universe that we hope to have. And So the cry from God tonight to each one of you at the core of your soul is, who told you you were naked? Who told you that is what is happening to you is strange? Who told you that in the economy of God this isn't exactly what's supposed to happen to you? Who told you that people's response to you isn't supposed to be exactly what it is? If you think about it, from the time of our birth, from before our birth, from our parents through the genetic history of our families, we were rooted in the kingdom of self. And it takes incredible violence for the root of that kingdom to be destroyed. Now that's all that's happening in time and space. The demands that we make on others, think of it. Do you really want that? Wherefore, seeing we also are surrounded about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us. Just make that self. And the self, the image of self, the image of way things should be, which doth so easily beset us. And let us run with patience the race that is set before us. You ever thought about the contradiction of those two terms? To run with patience. Looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith. I know you love my little cliches, but I look around and I'm distressed. I look within myself and I'm depressed. I look at Jesus and I'm at rest.
I found last week that I filled all the quiet time when God would want to deal with me. I was filling it with the radio, television, my family, the newspaper, and exercise, and that's what was, you know, I would make sure that entire universe kept full of those things, and I couldn't, there's no way nobody could, God could talk to me. And now, I just can't listen to the radio, I don't turn it on hardly. Exercise, okay, if I do, I don't. If I see the family break, the television sucks. And, I don't know if that's part of what you're saying, but it's really strange.
Well, it's the Spirit, the Holy Spirit is dealing with each person where they are. One of the things that I talk about a lot lately in the morning Bible study is where is the New Jerusalem for you? Where is heaven? If you think about it, you have to see that heaven, the only place heaven can be, is 1 micron from hell. Heaven can't be any place other than right next door, 1 micron away from hell. Because otherwise you'll create your own definition of it. You understand?
No.
Well, you'll create your own destiny. If things are going your way, you don't need God, so therefore you don't need faith, therefore you can't be in heaven. Does that communicate? I figured it would. Don't you have... I mean, just stop and think of your definitions of the way things should be. If they were that way, in Becca's And Becca, Rabbi Becca's favorite, well, then you wouldn't need God. Did you hear about that?
Yeah. No.
I'm going to get the story approximately right, so, but I need you to correct me anyway. I'm going to put my own spin on Rabbi Becca's story.
Targeting Rabbi Becca.
I'm going to Targum Rabbi, that's right, Targum Rabbi Becca. They
writers.
There were who's the teacher? I'll ask one question.
Valier.
Valier was the teacher in English, and they were playing this talk game where they talk about, well, what would you do if you had $1 million? And it was kind of neat because all the kids said they would do something with it. In other words, it wasn't something they would consume on themselves. They would do something with it, which. And then, so then they transformed the game and played the wishes game. And everybody said, well, what they were going to be wished for. And so Elise said, well, her three wishes were, she wished there would be no, and it's approximately this. She wished there'd be no pain, no suffering, and no hunger. And Becca looked at her, at Valerian said, Becca, if that were the case, we wouldn't need God. My point is, well, I mean, the idea that Elise would have, if she had three wishes in the whole world and she wished those three, is incredibly admirable. But the idea that Becca would say, but then we wouldn't need God, is the idea of, it's this tension that's going on in us. You understand? And we think the tension isn't supposed to happen. But that's, don't you see, it's, I wish for no this, no that, and this, but then I wouldn't need God. Oh, shit. And it's that tension that creates the antagonism, which brings us to be fully tested.
Tells me a way about the kids, you know, how, I guess Gary and Jacob are the little elders, you know, elders in our group, and just the interplay with the kids. It's like they are in a body, even at a young age. You know, it functions like a body. It's not like the a bad thing. But it's not like they're just kids until suddenly at 14 or 15 they're thrown into something. It's like they're integrating.
Wherefore, seeing we are surrounded with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us. I mean, you must suspect now that word easily isn't strong enough. Right? The self which does so easily beset us, the definitions which so easily beset us.
What does compassed about mean?
Surrounded. And let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. Now remember, we've talked about this before. The word for there is the Greek word hooper. It doesn't mean, it's one of the translations of it is for, but it's also better translated here, instead of. It's for who, instead of the joy that was set before him on the Mount of Transfiguration, when he had completed the way, when the seed was complete, when the road was finished, instead of that joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against his own self, lest you be wearied and faint in your minds. Am I talking to any of you? I didn't think so. Do you understand how quickly you quit in your mind? Michael quits every time he thinks he's going to be threatened by not getting his driver's license. Now he's not, and then he quits whenever I make fun of him.
I'm just a quitter.
But you quit in your mind, you see, and then what happens? You know it's only going to. Consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest you be wearied and faint in your minds. Your mind just faints. That's what... Everything was against him. Do you ever think about his two-bit disciples? I mean, they made this group look good. I mean, they were egomaniacs. They had no understanding. I mean, do you understand? The Christian church is made up of two-bit disciples, people that never get it right.
And this guy did have a high place, didn't he? King of the universe.
King of the universe.
He didn't have to put up with that shit. He's a jerks.
You're gone. You're history. Can you imagine, well, some of you, if you had the power? Just think if you had the power to just think of whatever you thought about, just went boom.
That would be the worst. I thought of this ever since I was a little kid. That would be the worst possible thing.
This is terrible. But this shows you my favorite movie was The Omega Man.
Wasn't that
the movie that? It's like everybody on the face of the planet was gone but itself. I used to love that movie.
I can understand that.
Harry and Molly would agree with you on that.
All right. I mean, just think about it.
Yeah. There was a wonderful Twilight Zone once where a guy wants to be alone. He wants everybody dead. And because he wants to read his books.
Oh, yeah.
He wants to read his books. Anyway, he goes into a bank vault to be alone because everybody's bothering him.
He reads on his break.
Right. Well, while he's in the bank vault, the world blows up. I mean, there's like a nuclear explosion or something, and everybody's dead. And then he comes out, and he's by himself. And then he accidentally drops his glasses and steps on them.
He goes to get all the books, everything he likes, and he stacks it up all around him, and he's like set to read that first book.
His glasses
fall over and break. He's like,
it's a great.
Oh, he needs
somebody to get him prepared.
You have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin. You don't want me to get into that one, do you? Okay. And you have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son or my child, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. The word there, I mean, again, it's not, the language thing here is weird because it doesn't say son in the Bible, it says child.
So what is actually, I mean, I know I do this constantly, so maybe it's harder for me to see what exactly does fainting mean. I mean, you don't like, you know.
You leave at every opportunity when there's something wrong. In your mind, you create another universe, or else you physically leave, or you throw a fit.
Somehow find a way out.
Whenever there's anything that's uncomfortable to you. I mean, let's face it. If you knew it was God, and God was down here and he spanked you, that would be chastening, that you could, if you knew it. God, okay, don't spank me, God. I'm going to get you. Or what are you going to do to me? You're going to endure the chastening. But see, God says that he's all and in all. And so if you experience something that you perceive as negative and you're chastened, it's God spanking you. Do you understand? He's not doing it for wrath. You believe, we've gone through this, and a whole lot of people this time, that you believe that chastening or getting corrected means separation. So you don't think there's any such thing as chastening, you think there's only punishment and wrath. That's impossible for you. You can never again be punished. You can never again experience wrath. You got to hear this.
What is the difference between chastening and punishment?
Chastening is
like correction.
Just it's the great story of there was a man and his little girl, and he tried for years and years and every tell her to watch both ways when you cross the street. Don't ever cross the street without looking both ways. So they have this great lesson, and so they're at the stop sign. And he's going to check her. He's testing her now. And so the light turns green, and she just starts walking right out in the middle of the street on the crosswalk. And he starts just raising all kinds of hell with her. He's going to spank her and beat her. Not because he's mad at her, but because he doesn't want her. And then she looks up and said, and he's saying, why did you, don't you know that if you cross this, da-da-da? And she looks up and says, oh, I know that, Daddy, but I know if I were with you, nothing bad could happen to me. Well, see, she knew chastening. And she then melted the heart of her father by that faith. Now, that's what God wants from us. Our response to chastening is, yeah, I know, Father, but I know that I never have to worry about that because when you're with me. Can you hear that at some level? So when you quit in your mind, then the chastening has to be repeated. So you don't want to quit in your mind anymore, unless you got someplace to go. That's why I said the kingdom of God has to be one micron away from hell. You know, because otherwise, the moment chastening comes, you'll go to some other place if you have all these options. Does that communicate to you? I don't know about you, but I don't have any other place to go.
So it makes it where you can see it quicker. And that's the process of testing.
Right.
You see it quicker.
Amen. You've forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as children. My child, despise not the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every child whom he receiveth. If you endure chastening, God's dealing with you as with legitimate children. For what child is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if you be without chastisement, whereof all legitimate children are partakers, then are you bastards and not legitimate children. There's several things you don't want to happen. You don't want God to visit you. Yeah. You don't want God to call you a little bastard.
Whoa, you little bastard. That's for sure.
Huh?
That's for sure.
Yeah.
If I heard a voice go, you little bastard.
You don't want that.
No, it'd be over.
So, that's why you should endure chastening.
If he says, woe unto you, little bastard, you know it's over.
If he says, woe, you little bastard, then it's really bad.
Yeah, you can kiss your posterity back.
Furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them, what did he say? We had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them respect, or reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure. In other words, for their own purposes. But he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now, no chastening for the present seems to be joyous. Oh, no, I just love it.
I just like it to happen one time, just one time.
No chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. And nevertheless, afterward, it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Now, the afterward of suffering is one of the great sermons of the world, because the afterward isn't, you know, across the great by in Beulah land. The afterward is the moment you see it's from the hand of God. In that moment, it's transformed and it's made majestic.
What's the difference between chastening and discipline?
Nothing. Wherefore, lift up the hands which hang down and the feeble knees. Now, we've had a few feeble knees around here lately. We've had some feeble knees. We've had some hands dragging. Lift up the hands that drag down. And the feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but rather let it be healed. Follow peace with all, and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. That's the danger. When there's this deep kind of suffering, deep kind of chastening, deep kind of shaking going on, the tendency is always to affix blame.
To what?
To affix blame externally. And unfortunately, when we're at this level, a whole lot of the blame affixing goes towards me. I hate when that happens.
I can't believe people would do that.
I hate it when I mistake, you know, like when I get up in the morning and I'm going to brush my teeth and instead I grab some barbed wire and I brush my teeth. You hate that. You hate when that happens. Or like you're going to, after you've done number two and you go to the bathroom and you're going to get some toilet paper.
Oh,
and instead you get sandpaper. You hate that. You hate that. Looking diligently. Let me start over again. Looking diligently. I did that one pretty good. That's like, have you heard the statement that I'm most proud of in my whole life for a long, every year, I mean forever?
What is that?
In the middle of preaching, a morning Bible study, in the middle of it, he knows what's coming. In the middle of it, to describe Harry's one of his little moods, you know what I mean. When I call it, I said it's Rice Krispie righteousness. And I stopped right in the middle. I said, "Oh, that's pretty good." Looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. Lest there be any fornicator or profane person as Esau, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthright. Now, that's, you know, we've studied that 100 times, what you sell your birthright for. For you know that afterward, when he would have inherited the blessing, he was rejected. For he found no place of repentance, though he sought it carefully with tears. For you are not come unto the mount that might be touched, and that burned with fire, nor unto blackness and darkness and tempest, and the sound of a trumpet and the voice of words, which voice that they heard entreated that they should, that the word should not be spoken to them any more, for they could not endure that which was commanded. And if so much as a beast touched the mountain, it shall be stoned or thrust through with a dart. And so terrible was the sight that Moses said, I exceedingly quake and fear. But you are come unto Mount Zion, unto the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn, which are written in heaven, and to God, the judge of all, and to the spirits of just men made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling that speaketh better things than that of Abel. And that's where you—that's where we have a right to live there, to stand there, to come to that holy place. But see that you refuse not him that speaketh. For if they escaped not who refused him that spake on earth, much more shall we not escape if we turn away from him that speaketh from heaven, whose voice then shook the earth. But now he hath promised, saying, yet once more I shake not the earth only, but also heaven. And that's what the shaking, that's the word, seismos. That's the word in Revelation that's translated earthquake. It's the word in Matthew that says there will be earthquakes in diverse places. It doesn't say earthquakes, it says seismos. There shall be shaking in all of the diverse places in you. Even unto heaven. Do you understand? Not in the earth only, but also in heaven. And this word yet once more signifieth the removing of those things that are shaken, as of things that are made, that those things which cannot be shaken may remain. I promise you that any part of your life that can be shaken will be shaken. You have a choice. You'll quit in your mind or quit actually. Either way, you then do not endure as a child, as a legitimate child. And it's up to us to remind each other of this in the midst of the suffering. Don't, this is not Ann Landering. And this yet one, and this word yet once more signifieth the removing of those things that are shaken, as of things that are made, that those things which cannot be shaken may remain. Wherefore we, receiving a kingdom which cannot be moved, let us have grace, whereby we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. For our God is a consuming fire. Let brotherly love continue. Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unaware. Remember them that are in bonds, or bound with them, as bound with them, and them which suffer adversity as being yourselves also in that same body. The fruit of all of this is a body of people. But if we look to the body, then the body will disappear. I looked at Jesus, the dove of peace flew into my heart. I looked at the dove and it flew away. If we walk in the light as he is in the light, then we'll have the fellowship. And if in your mind you have put too much importance on the body, then to you the body will be shaken. If you put too much in, because our God is a jealous God, he's a consuming fire. If you've literalized any part of the parable, if you've literalized marriage, if you literalize relationships, then all of that will be shaken. Whatever it is that you have placed too much importance on will be shaken. It's a promise. And this is the set time for that to take place, the Passover, the preparation for Passover. So don't be surprised.
But God will, he'll chasten you till the day he's gone.
Yeah, because the flesh is going to die. The flesh is falling away. I want you to visualize this. There's a perfect diamond within you. Cut perfect, perfect clarity. Let's not say diamond. There's a perfect gemstone within each of you. And your flesh is the perfect foil for that gemstone to be revealed. If it's a diamond, it'll be revealed on black velvet. If it's an emerald, it may be revealed on another type. But whatever that gemstone is, your flesh is the perfect foil for it, the perfect contrast. You were made perfectly to be just as you are. To reveal that contrast. But if the black velvet or the black background tries to look like the diamond, then what will happen? The diamond won't be seen. That's what it means. Whatsoever things are a gain to me, they're a loss for Christ. You've got to see this. Let him display his handiwork without your interference, but with your cooperation. Father, I present myself to you, the living sacrifice. Can all of you hear that? Everybody say Ben. So don't be surprised at the suffering. Don't be surprised if the chastening exists. It's that which is necessary to reveal the pearl of great price within you. Think it not strange. Rest.
It's neat to see this chastening, not punishment.
Yeah, you got to hear this. It's impossible for you to be punished. You understand that, Miss?
Actually, the punishment would be to be left alone.
It's only the spiritual people can say that, though.
It would take like a spiritual rock.
Spiritual giant to say that. Everybody understand a little bit? I don't feel like talking anymore.
Yeah.
Take it, big guy. Okay.